Welcome to A World of Fragile Truths, a podcast by the knowledge platform Security and Rule of Law, where we unpack the latest evidence for our field, which show the assumptions under this sector's work are often fragile. My name is Christian Kuitert, and today's latest evidence comes from our guest, Cristina Hoyos, who heads the Latin America and Caribbean unit within DCAF, which is the Geneva Center for Security Sector Governance. A Colombian herself, she helped develop an interesting research on climate security risks for indigenous and rural women in Colombia. We'll discuss how indigenous perceptions of security can be at a more collective level, for example, and are very much linked to their natural environment. Our other guest is Abigail Robinson, who leads her own consulting organization, Continua, and also serves as in an advisory role to DCAF. Her extensive experience with various security organizations and departments puts her in a great position to talk to Cristina about the role the security sector can play in supporting indigenous communities in their struggles with climate change. Welcome, Abigail and Cristina. Off we go. Yeah, Abigail, you were in Colombia actually last week, right? You had to miss our national holiday here in the Netherlands celebrating the King's birthday, which sounds very outdated pronouncing it out loud. But how was it?
It was great. Sorry to have missed King's Day, of course, but a very interesting visit. And I was there at a time when the Colombian national defense policy, the new national defense policy, was just published. And that has, as one of its priority issues, environmental protection. So I think a good, good basis also for today's conversation.
No, for sure. Maybe we'll get back to that then. But first, yeah, we're discussing the research that you collaborated on, Cristina, titled Indigenous and Rural Women's Voices: Recommendations to Address Climate Security Risks. Can you tell us in a few sentences, what is this research about?
What we wanted to know is exactly, specifically in the existing climate crisis, to know and to analyze what is the impact for indigenous communities in the Amazon basin. And we did a research specifically in the Putumayo, in the more upper hills part, to know exactly what are the perceptions regarding security, what are the access to justice of indigenous women, specifically the Kamsé and the Ingas, because they are very exposed not only to climate change, but specifically to violence. And so we wanted to know more about their perceptions. And then we worked together with the Colombian police, with UNIPEP, which is the unit which is working in the implementation of the peace accord and specifically in peace building. So for us, it was important to have a better understanding of the role of the security sector and how to create better confidence between the indigenous communities and the security sector.
Right, and you mentioned the word indigenous a few times, and also sketched some images, I suppose, you know, the Amazon basin and hills. But I find it still hard to imagine. Then, you know, what does that mean, and how are their daily lives, different from non-indigenous?
Yes, that's a very good question. First of all, what is their daily lives? Well, the Kamsé and the Ingas, living in Sibundoy and rural women, they are mainly, the Kamsé are originally from Sibundoy, and they have been exposed to climate change due to strong floods and deforestation in the area. And all the food they're generating with their ancestral knowledge, with the little chagras, there are little spaces where they produce their daily food, are being threatened by climate change. Why? Because of the floods, because of the heat, because of several factors, so that they have an insecure access to food. They are exposed, due to the history of the country, to several armed groups in the region. So the violence has been quite high to get to the river, to get the fish. The fish is several times contaminated due to the mercury that is being used for the illegal gold mining. So access to food is absolutely a very important situation that are affecting them.
So with indigenous, I suppose, then you mean people that have been living in these environments for generations already and indeed are also dependent on that natural environment, maybe, for example, also the way they produce food. And well, Abigail, you brought this research to my attention, actually. So why do you think it's important for our, let's say, knowledge platform network to know about this? What's the urgency?
Yeah, I think one thing I would highlight is that, within the security sector and in international policy circles, the concept of climate security has been getting a lot of attention the past few years. And there seems to be a, sort of a growing consensus that climate change is going to be, quote unquote, a threat multiplier. So something that will exacerbate existing tensions in society, give rise to new conflicts over scarce natural resources, for example. And what worries me a little bit is that I think we still seem to be approaching this often through very traditional understandings of security that relate to conflict, to violence, to criminality. And what I think this study does so well is it reminds us that some of the most impactful solutions to climate security problems may very well also come from other sectors. So policies related to agriculture, land ownership, and how that intersects with gender. But solutions may also come from other forms of knowledge, including indigenous knowledge.
And yeah, the security sector plays a prominent role in this piece. Now I can imagine that they play, for example, an important role in, environmental disasters like floods. But can you tell us a bit more about their role in this then?
Sure. So in Colombia, both the police and the military also have a mandate related to environmental protection specifically. And again, that's highlighted really clearly in the new national defense policy in Colombia, which is unusual, I would say. The Colombian peace accords from 2016 also highlight the importance of ecosystems and the environment. So I think there's a real understanding here in some ways of the links between the health of the environment and human security. There are different, different operational approaches that are taken in the security sector related to environmental protection, but the most prominent is dealing with environmental crime.
What is environmental crime?
So environmental crime includes some of the examples that Christina has already spoken about. It includes illegal mining. In the case of Colombia, also deforestation is an increasing problem, wildlife trafficking as well. And I don't know, Christina, whether there's anything you'd add to that in terms of the different forms of environmental crime that you looked at in this study.
Yes, but specifically in the study in the Putumayo, we have one of the most exposed departments to illegal crop cultivation. That means for 1 hectare of coca leaves production, you have to destroy like 2 to 3 hectares to produce the coca leaves. So, and the consequences are the floods that we have mentioned already, and higher temperatures, of course. And one thing that is important as well to know is like the indigenous communities that we talked to were not only from there, but they were migrants. We were dealing with a lot of internal migration in Colombia, which is as well affecting deforestation, of course. And this is a factor that we analyze as well within the study.
And as I understand, there's also quite some threatening of environmental activists, for example. And
the environmentalists or environmental defenders worldwide, Colombia has the highest level of assassination.
Yeah, so the security sector has a role to play, but are they also up for this task? As I think many of our listeners will think of Colombia in relation to also that conflict that has led luckily to a 2016 peace agreement, but of course that results in very different maybe skills and dynamics with populations than the skills that are required, as you phrase it right now, and also maybe in terms of the trust. So do you think the security sector is well positioned for this time?
I think the security sector has as well the responsibility. And as Abby mentioned, it is not only one sector that has to bring the answer for climate change and for the security of the women. The issue is very simple. You have to deal with a country where the presence of the state was not really in conflict-affected areas. So We have a certain vacuum in certain areas in Colombia. I think specifically the Amazon region, which is one third part of the country, it's very complicated to cover as a state because you have very isolated populations and it's not so easy to be present. I think the security role, the security sector is prepared, but the challenges here that we face is, first of all, the coordination between within the security sector, that means the military and the police, should be work better and closer to the needs and demands from local populations, like the indigenous woman who has a lot, they have a lot of knowledge about what should be the answer for climate change. Or
how do you improve that?
I think creating spaces for dialogue on a local level could be a very interesting way to include women's voices and women's concern, and to create a better confidence between local populations and the security sector, because this is really one of the core, is exactly that the confidence is not there. And how to create it is that you know exactly what is the role of the security sector and what is the role of the women. And if they can be included in decision-making processes, they would be much more empowered. And so together we could find a better
place. So really going out into those difficult to reach areas maybe, and being in dialogue about, you know, what are the security needs actually. Do you have anything to add to that, Abigail?
Yeah, you know, you asked whether the security sector is up to the task, and that's a good question. I mean, I do think from my work in Colombia over the past, you know, couple of years, that this security sector is perhaps a little bit more oriented than most to environmental protection. But I think there are also some areas where improvements are needed. You know, and one is it is a traditional task of the security sector, both police and military, to protect the population from harm, from violence, and there's a need, I think, now increasingly to focus on the risks communities are facing due to the violence that's associated specifically with natural resource extraction, the violence and criminality, you know, whether that comes from extractive companies or illegal armed groups, criminal groups.
What kind of resources in this case?
Natural resources, mining, for example, but also, again, deforestation. You know, Christina, I think, nicely described the ways in which natural resource extraction are, you know, sometimes linked with other forms of criminality. So in this case, narco-trafficking, for example. You know, I think there's also a need for an increasing focus, as you highlighted earlier, Christian, on better protection of those who protect the environment. You know, if we believe that protection of the environment is fundamental to human security, so better protection of environmental defenders, but also protection of indigenous communities, which have spent, you know, generations stewarding and safeguarding natural resources and also biodiversity more broadly. And I think there's also room for the security sector potentially to take a more preventive approach. So the natural, you know, the natural orientation of the police and military, police in particular, is often to kind of respond after an environmental crime has taken place. And the challenge in this space is that, you know, once that happens, the damage has been done. So it takes, you know, years sometimes to restore and regenerate ecosystems that are damaged by pollution.
What does that look like? Last question then before a quick break. That prevention?
I think the prevention really looks potentially different in different spaces. I mean, this is an area where we've heard different views on the desirability, for example, of greater presence of the state. One of the indigenous women we worked with in the study, or that Christina and her team worked with, said very plainly, look, you know, I'm not sure that additional presence of police is really what's helpful to our community. And we have other ways of thinking about what keeps us safe and secure. So I would say the answer to that question shouldn't necessarily come from us, but really needs to come from dialogue between, respectful dialogue between security institutions and the communities they're there to serve.
Well, let's hear more about concrete adaptation strategies maybe, and the way the international community also can support, after listening to a voice note of someone else's experience with the topic of indigenous climate security.
My name is Anne-Christine Konzak, and I did my research on indigenous communities in the urban context in Rio de Janeiro in Brazil, and specifically considering the perception of security, also referring to the protection of ancestral knowledge and practices. Looking at the case study that I worked with, the research has shown that, first of all, urban indigenous identities are barely visible and hold very little space through persisting racialization processes and stigmas within the urban society. So therefore, I think the role of the security sector in the urban setting may first of all be to secure safe cultural spaces within society, to make indigenous identities more visible and to address these structural issues, but also at the same time ensure physical urban spaces where indigenous peoples can actually still practice their culture and their practices so that these and the knowledge are protected.
Thank you for sharing your perspective. Back to our conversation with Christina and Abigail. As I mentioned just before the break, what concrete adaptation strategies do indigenous communities have to either adapt or to climate change or to play a role maybe in countering it? Christina?
Yes, that's a very good question. I think the indigenous communities, and in the study that we did and visiting them in Sibundoy, they were trying to adapt with the chakras to bring in more the ancestral knowledge to inform the security sector, the police and the military, what was going on, because it's very interesting that the women specifically were the ones mentioning what if the illegal mining sector was present or if there were some specific illegal actors. And
What kind of ancestral knowledge should I think of then?
They are producing different seeds. They are bringing in their kids to share the knowledge, their knowledge. So they're sharing the traditions. But this has been quite challenging for them, because I remember in one of the conversations with one of the indigenous was as well with the language, because they're losing the language. So several of the agricultural traditions were complicated in the sense that they were not able to communicate to the children, but they don't have any kind of support from the state to do that. And I think the adaptation measures that they have to put in, that we need to put in place, it's absolutely a challenge.
Right. So knowledge about, let's say, how to deal with the natural environment for food production, or how to use the resources in a sustainable way.
Yes,
or...
exactly.
And how can international organizations that focus on the security sector then support this?
I think we have to work on rural level to listen to the communities, to create mechanisms to have a better understanding what is the role of the communities, what is the role of the security sector, try to build a space for dialogue with both actors, because specifically in the Colombian context, it has been a challenge due to the 50 years of violence in the whole country. And I think the Colombian police is ready to work towards this direction. And specifically, as Abby mentioned already, there is the new policy for defense and security from the Colombian Defense Ministry, which includes very clear that there is a need to work on the environment and on climate change. And you have to understand that from the Colombian perspective, in Brazil, 70% of the Amazon basin, Colombia and Brazil, are the owners. So I think there is a responsibility that the state and the security sector has, and the international community can support them with to develop the right strategies and to support them in these initiatives on a local basis.
And not just the defense strategy, as I understand, right? Because in 2016 peace agreement between the government and the FARC, there was also, I think, a role for environmental rights and biodiversity. So, yeah, and Abigail, does that provide any entry points as well?
Yeah, you know, I think what I'd actually add to what Christina has said are a couple of things. First, for international partners, you know, I would also be thinking about how we can better integrate security with more sort of traditional economic development programming. You know, what we've seen in Colombia, but also across a number of other contexts where we've done research recently, is a caution from local government officials and also from security sector officials themselves that, you know, the answer to this is not, you know, the answer to environmental crime, for example, is not just stronger law enforcement, because if this is what communities rely on, you know, minor violations of the environmental law or being pressured into environmental crime because they have limited economic opportunities, then you can stop crime in one place, but it will pop up somewhere else. And so there's a really strong need, I think, to think carefully about sort of sequencing and integration of programming so it doesn't just focus on the security aspects of environmental crime, for example. The other thing that I would say in terms of recommendations to international partners is that I was really struck by the degree to which addressing gender inequalities or historical and cultural barriers to women's participation can and should really be part of the solution to climate security problems. So again, looking at whether or not women can own land, the ability of women to participate in governance of the environment and of natural resources, mm-hmm. these all came across as important solutions and important ways of increasing resilience in the face of climate security problems. And these are also things that international partners, I think, can support.
And maybe additional, what we see is that there is still a lack of knowledge about climate change within the security sector. That means we think it would be interesting to train the police specifically about the climate change factors so that they can read better the environment, a better knowledge about biodiversity, a better knowledge about what are the natural resources in the specific regions and differences between the different communities. Because if you go to the south part of Colombia, there you will be dealing with different indigenous groups with different traditions, with different languages. Mm-hmm. So the police should be better prepared. They should be trained more to be gender sensitive as well. Because, for example, in Colombia, you have in the indigenous community since 1991 in the constitution, it's quite clear that the security sector cannot enter without any permission from the indigenous communities to their 717 different natural reservoirs that they have. They have to know better what are the traditions and how to be trained in gaining trust from the communities and do the right thing and give the right answers to the high levels of violence that that the communities are exposed, specifically women in these areas.
So really invest in knowing these very diverse and complex environments better to also be able to do your job better, of course, but also again to harvest maybe on the great knowledge that is already there for generations in relation to the climate questions, let's say. We're already quite close to the end. It always goes very very quickly. So to close off, maybe what is the most important change in the coming 2 or 4 years that is needed to help indigenous communities in one step forward, let's say, in their fight against climate change?
Well, I think here it would be great if we could work more in the role of the security sector and the nexus to climate change and human security. And I think here, politically, there is a huge will to do something to stop climate change, specifically in this region. It is very important that the security sector can be better prepared to face and to contribute to mitigate climate change in this very complex environment. We should work more on what is the specific role for the security sector and how can we as from the international community enhance and prepare them better. You have to understand you cannot come from Geneva or from Amsterdam or Den Haag and then you can start to work with indigenous communities because you have to create trust, you have to involve them in a kind of conversation.
So really putting that will, let's say, to do something to action with training and better equipping, let's say, the security sector for these new challenges. And Abigail, what about you?
You know, I hope that policymakers and practitioners in Colombia, you know, both within and outside of the security sector, can also really take advantage of kind of the deeper and more holistic definition of security that's been offered by the women Christina and her team worked with. Maybe we didn't cover so clearly that I also see as a growing problem is, mm-hmm. you know, I mentioned kind of the tricky aspects of strengthening law enforcement in this area. You know, it's important, but it also has to be done with sensitivity. I mean, the other thing we saw is also real resentment at the community level that, you know, communities are targeted. And meanwhile, large extractive companies and illegal armed groups are doing damage on a much broader scale, but they're operating with impunity. I mean, that it's a real problem. It affects the legitimacy of the police, not just in Colombia, but elsewhere. I think that maybe that we didn't touch on quite as clearly. And the whole purpose of the study was also to develop indicators. You know, indicators that help us to better understand how climate and environmental factors affect human security. And that's not just so that we can measure how the situation is getting worse, even though in many cases it is. It was also to provide a foundation for, I think, more focused action at this intersection of environmental health and human security, which is becoming increasingly important. You know, so I hope that these indicators might be used in the future to design some innovative programs. And I would add, just to wrap up, that I think this has implications well beyond Colombia. You know, obviously, the indicators themselves are very grounded in a specific local context, but this approach of working with indigenous communities, you know, connecting carefully then with the security sector, and again, finding ways to work at this critical intersection of the environment and security, I think has implications that would be really useful starting points for programming elsewhere as well.
Yeah, for sure. Good that you mentioned those indicators that indeed play quite a central role in the recommendations of the research, and I think are a very useful resource for those working on Colombia and beyond. So definitely take a look at that. I'd advise our listeners. So now we know what to do. Thank you both for putting time and thinking into this episode. And thank you, listeners, of course, for joining the conversation once again. To dive a bit deeper than only one episode into a context, we'll stay in Colombia next month discussing the official Truth Commission report that came out of the peace agreement called Hay Futuro Si Hay Verdad. I practiced that one for you with one of its writers. We'll hear from each other next month.